Daily Drive is brought to you by Reynolds & Reynolds, the industry leader in automotive technology. Want to find out how you can redefine your CRM? Visit reyrey.com/focus. That's reyrey.com/focus.
Welcome to Daily Drive. I'm Steve Schmidt with Automotive News. It's Friday, October 30th. When it comes to electric vehicles, automakers have made huge gains in addressing consumer concerns. Models offered today or in the near future are larger and go further. Cost has even come down in some cases, making some models comparable to vehicles equipped with internal combustion powertrains. Yet, while vehicle range, size, and cost concerns are increasingly meeting consumer expectations, one anxiety continues to weigh on consumers: charging. As Automotive News reported earlier this month, the charging network in America has a lot of catching up to do. According to John Eichberger, executive director of the Fuels Institute, gas stations and convenience stores are an important player in building the charging infrastructure in the U.S., and there are multiple ways in which they can increase the number of chargers on their properties. He also says, in some ways, charging can be more convenient in the future because of consumers' abilities to recharge at traditional gas stations, as well as at home, at work, at the grocery store, and so on, places where you don't find gas pumps today. Overcoming consumer perceptions will be key, and that may require overbuilding infrastructure initially to offset consumer concerns with charging. What else needs to be done to address consumers' charging anxiety? Is California's efforts to ban the sale of vehicles with internal combustion engines by 2035 realistic? We've reached John Eichberger at his home office in Haymarket, Virginia. John, thanks for joining me today on Daily Drive. How are you?
I'm great, Steve. How are you doing, man?
Doing terrific. Thank you for asking, and thanks for taking some time out of your schedule to share with us your perspectives on the charging infrastructure in the United States. So why don't we start with that? What is the state of the EV charging network across the U.S. today?
Well, it's growing. It is still pretty much in its infancy in terms of the number of outlets, especially if you think about it relative to the number of gas stations in the market. But it's probably on par with the rate of EV growth. The challenge we have, though, is we're expecting electric vehicle sales to increase pretty quickly over the next 5 to 6 years. And we're going to have to really push hard to get the infrastructure where it needs to be to give those customers ready access to electricity when they're away from their homes.
So you touch upon, I think, a very important topic there that says automakers are making gains in addressing a lot of consumers' concerns, right? Larger vehicles, more range. But the charging anxiety is something perhaps that is still out there and something that in many respects could be outside of automakers' control. So what are energy companies doing right now to address consumers' charging anxiety?
Well, there's a lot of efforts out there. You can't really take a look at any of the major energy companies in the world and not find some sort of electrification strategy within their portfolio. The realization is, as you mentioned, the vehicles coming on market in the next 5 years, there's going to be dozens and dozens of electric vehicle models entering the market. We don't know what volume percent of production they're going to represent, but we know there are going to be more and more options. They're better built, they're longer range, faster recharge, more powerful, more capable, all those things, more that attracts customers, right? So we know that they're going to be buying them. And the shift in terms of energy demand is going to start diversifying. And so the energy companies are looking at it going, hey, you know, we've been servicing this transportation market for the last 100, 125 years. We're not giving up. We're not going to abandon this. These are still our customers. Whether you are an energy producer or an energy retailer, you're looking at going, these are my customers, and I want them to continue to be my customers. So I need to be part of the solution to give them the energy they need to get from point A to point B. And so you're seeing a lot of investment. You're seeing a lot of the oil companies in particular buying partnerships that allow them the opportunity to deploy charging infrastructure and even get into fuel cell infrastructure for hydrogen. So you're seeing that diversification. From the retail side, you're seeing a lot of attention now. And you know, I'm working with the National Association of Convenience Stores on a project to try to get convenience retailers to pay attention to the charging opportunities and partner up with people who can help them get into the business. Because, you know, for the EV driver, once they get their vehicle, they have a certain pattern of travel. That shouldn't have to change just because they changed their powertrain. And so the stores they've been going to routinely to get gasoline and pick up coffee or something, they should be able to get electricity there too. It's kind of the mindset the industry is starting to adopt. And I think you're going to see a lot of new entries into the charging business over the next 5 years, which is going to be exciting. I mean, quite frankly, this is an exciting time to be in the transportation space, and people are paying attention to it.
Absolutely. Your mention of gas station and convenience stores, are they embracing their role, you know, the role you just described? And you know, do they really have the capital and the wherewithal to invest that capital to increase the number of charging stations to complement the, you know, the gas pumps that they have?
So that's really two very different questions. On the first one, are they embracing this? It depends on which chain you're talking to and where they operate. If you are a fuel retailer in California, you better be paying attention to this because you see it every single day. You know, half the EVs sold in the U.S. are sold in California. If you are a progressive fuel retailer, a convenience retailer, and you have a very strong food service offer and you're paying attention to the tea leaves, you might be getting into this business. There are still a huge population of convenience retailers who have never seen an electric vehicle, have never driven an electric vehicle. They live in areas where EVs just don't exist, and they don't necessarily believe that it's coming because they haven't seen it, touched it, felt it. And so they're looking and going, why am I, I'm not going to get into that. You know, I'm going to continue doing my business. And, you know, you're going to have to really convince me that I need to change my strategy. And so we're doing a lot of work through the Fuels Institute and NACS to educate all retailers about the opportunities, challenges, and what it takes to get into this. In terms of their capital availability, there are several different ways for businesses to get into charging services. They can do it themselves. And they can go ahead and they can contract with an electrician. They can work with a utility to boost their power availability. They can install the conduit. They can contract somebody to come and install chargers. They can run the business. They can do all that. And that gives them a lot of control over the brand, the pricing strategy, the loyalty programs they employ. But it also puts them into a business that they're not real familiar with. So there's a learning curve there and there's a capital investment there, but there's opportunities there and there's companies out there to help them navigate that and do it right and be profitable with it. Profitable in the sense of long-term profitability and not immediate. There's no real money right now or ROI on it, but there will be eventually. And these companies can help the retailers get into that. But then there's also those who say, you know what? This is not my core competency. This is not the business I want to be in. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to partner with somebody who is going to come in and give me a turnkey operation. And they're going to pay me a lease for the parking spaces I'm giving them. They're going to put their systems on my property. They're going to run them. They're going to handle the charging. They're going to handle the permitting. They're going to handle the maintenance. And they're going to pay me for the real estate. And then my goal is to convert those charging customers to my customers, get them inside my store. Now, that's a turnkey operation, which is really very little risk to the retailer, but it does require you to delegate the management of your brand reputation because they are on your site. So they are an extension of your brand, and that can be scary for some retailers. They take their brand very seriously. So, but there's opportunities here. So I don't think capital availability is really a constraint. In this respect, it really comes down to what's your business strategy, what's your physical space on your property to accommodate this, and you know, what's your comfort level in terms of getting into it either solo or in partnership with somebody.
Well, I think the notion that there's multiple pathways to be a player in this space are interesting, and obviously, I think you know, depending on where you are, what the current state of your business is, would, you know, and what you're interested in doing. To your point, your strategy would dictate what path you would be most interested in. It seems to me, however, the what if, the why do this, all is pretty consistent, and that centers around the consumer. Do consumers actually want this? Can you talk a little bit about what you and the team are doing to understand consumer expectations and behaviors when it comes to charging?
Yeah. So earlier this year, the Fuels Institute launched an electric vehicle council, and that council is really dedicated to helping the market understand better the opportunities and challenges associated with charging infrastructure. And we've done research that's in peer review on the regulations that affect installation operations, state and local level. We are developing a education toolkit for businesses that want to get into charging services, what they need to do. And we just commissioned a project looking at existing research or a literature review of consumer behavior. Who is driving EVs? Who's buying EVs? Who's likely to be driving and buying EVs in 5 to 10 years? What type of driving do they do? How many miles? What's their behavior? What's their routines? What is their charging behavior? Where do they charge? When do they charge? What do they want to be available at a charging location? And the company that's doing this for us, we've sat down with them 2 or 3 times, and they've given us an update on the research. And the research is fascinating, very enlightening. Some of it just kind of surprises me when I look at it and changes some of my perspective. One of the things that came out is electric vehicle drivers, from the literature they've read, seem to drive more per week than gasoline internal combustion engine drivers. You know, typically when we've surveyed customers, people drive maybe 40 miles a day. It really isn't a whole lot. I mean, I used to drive, you know, a lot more than that, but 40 miles a day, you can recharge your vehicle on a 120 volt outlet at night. It's not really hard to recharge that. Level 2 works very well and on a frequent basis. But because the EV is less expensive to operate, it seems like, and maybe it's just the location where the EVs are located, they're driving more. They're driving 40 to 50 miles a day, and it's compared to 30 to 40 in this research.
Wow, that is interesting.
But the dynamic, it is interesting. It really shocked me. I really thought that'd be different. But the other thing that was interesting is we know that 80% of charging occasions currently occur at home or at the office. As we grow the market for EVs, we're going to get out of the demographic profile of an EV driver that owns a house and has a garage. We're going to get into the apartment dweller, the condo dweller, who does not have a garage, only has street parking or big parking lot parking. They're not going to be able to charge at home in most instances. So they're going to need some charging in market. And because of that, I've been thinking, man, you know, DC fast charging, we have got to accelerate the deployment of DC fast chargers, because these guys aren't going to sit there for 30, 40 minutes to recharge their vehicle. They're not going to want to do that. Especially if you think a convenience store model, and nobody sits at a convenience store 15, 20 minutes, so they're 5 minutes and they're out. But what this study is showing us is because the miles traveled are so low, these drivers might be able to use a level 2 charger 2 or 3 times a week while they're doing their grocery shopping or they're doing this, that, or the other. And that may be all they need. And so, you know, it's too early to really make a definitive conclusion, but you know, the researcher and I have been talking, and we've been working together quite a while, and he said, you know, my opinion is starting to shift a little bit. Maybe this focus on DC fast charges for the customer is not necessarily 100% accurate. Maybe the diversity of L2 chargers in the market could be sufficient for a lot of these customers. And I'm beginning to think maybe that's correct. That said, that's not necessarily the case for all charging locations. If you're at a restaurant, yeah, an L2 might be enough. If you're a grocery store or a shopping center, an L2 might be enough. If you're a convenience store, a fast food restaurant, no, you need the DC fast charger. So it really becomes not just what does the customer need, but what does the customer need when they're at specific locations? And so we're really trying to get our arms around how do we optimize deployment of different charging infrastructure at different facilities to match up the purpose of the customer's visit with their need for electricity and provide that holistic experience that will benefit both the host of the charger and the customer at the same time.
We'll be right back with more from my conversation with John Eichberger, Executive Director of the Fuels Institute.
Is your CRM slowing your salespeople down? Do they have to copy down notes about a prospect if they want to leave their desk? Are they constantly being asked to get more info into the CRM? Do they know which customers are the most important to contact? The automotive CRM, as we know it, is broken. It's time to give your team something that makes their job easier, that prioritizes their day for them based on who is the most likely to buy right now, that allows them to stay connected during the entire sales process, no matter where they are. A CRM can't be an isolated tool anymore. Customer relationship management is dealership-wide, and it's ongoing. A CRM needs to tie all of the silos in your business together to proactively manage every aspect of every opportunity. Are you ready to redefine your CRM? To learn more, visit reyrey.com/focus. That's R-E-Y-R-E-Y.com/F-O-C-U-S.
Well, I think that flexibility is also going to be a driver of adoption and minimizing consumers' charging anxiety. Just what you described, I think there's more of a advantage to consumers. I can't top off my gas tank at my place of employment, right? I have to go to a convenience store to do that. Whereas what you're describing here is, yeah, I can go to the convenience store to top off my charge, but I can also do it at a restaurant, and I can also do it at home, and I can also do it to a shopping center. That provides a lot more flexibility than internal combustion engines can, and requiring to go to a gas tank to fuel up.
It does in that respect, but it also creates a level of maybe some confusion in the market, because, and I'm comparing it to what we've been doing for the last 100 years. There's a gas station, you know where they are. They're everywhere. There's 150, 155,000 of them in the United States. They are not hard to find. EV charging locations may not be as prominent, and they're not going to be on every single corner. And so that could cause some confusion for the non-EV driver thinking, man, am I going to be able to find enough charging outlets to support me? Once they get in the car, however, the EV has a computer database of all chargers in your general location. You know, hey, car, find me a charging location next to me. There are six stations relatively close to you. And that's going to be pretty easy for once you get in the car to find charging. But you're right. You're going to have charging locations at so many different facilities that the perception of the potential EV driver is very different from the reality of the actual EV driver in terms of finding charging experience. That said, do we need 150,000 locations to charge electric vehicles? Maybe not. There's a lot of analysis out there trying to determine what is the necessary infrastructure to support a growing electric vehicle population. And then there's the next flip. So you can say we need X number of chargers to support X number of EVs within a given geographic region. And you can do that calculation based upon whatever methodology you want. But then there's the other one. How many chargers do we need to convince the potential buyer that this is not an issue? And I think that number is an exponentially higher number than what we actually need. So the perception of what we need versus the reality of what we need, I think is very different. And unfortunately, I think we need to build closer towards the perception if the objective is to get people to buy electric vehicles. Now, if the objective is not, then you build what you need. But if the goal is get customers to buy electric vehicles or get them comfortable so that they feel they could buy an electric vehicle, we need to build the infrastructure closer to that perceived need rather than the actual need, which is a much more daunting challenge.
Let's go back to California. You mentioned them a few minutes ago. Announced a ban on sale of vehicles with internal combustion engines by 2035. Do you think that's realistic? It seems like a massive charging network, whether reality or perception, to your point, is going to need to be created. Is 15 years enough time to build that?
Well, okay, I'll put on somebody else's shoes right now. Was 9 years enough time for the United States to get to the moon after Kennedy announced that was the intent? And you know, people say, you know, the equations of the Apollo project, are telling, because if the nation rallies around a cause and dedicates their resources and is unified in achieving that objective, then anything can be done. That's the argument. All that being said, the market is not unified on this. The consumers are not unified on this. The industry is not unified on this. There is no, real true north calling for this type of initiative. It is a mandate. It is not aspirational at all, in my opinion. It is, we are going to fundamentally change the market, and we're going to do it by requirement. And you know, that's the government's prerogative. The challenge I have with this is, has the administration in California fully comprehended the implications of the effort? Do they really appreciate all of the nuances and all of the sectors of the marketing economy and the consumers' lives that are going to be affected by this? And are they willing to create a program that takes that into consideration? On the bright side, when California implemented the low carbon fuel standard, CARB, the California Resources Board, created a program with considerable flexibility. And I don't know if that was the intent, but that's been the effect. And if you take a look at the history of the program, they've made several amendments to the requirements based upon their evaluation of how the market had responded. If you look at their forecast for what fuels would comply and generate the credits for compliance with the LCFS early in the program compared to now, there is absolutely no similarity, because they realized the industry was actually pursuing compliance strategies that were legitimate and realistic and pragmatic that had not been contemplated by CARB in the early stages of the program. So they adjusted the program to reflect that. And I think that, you know, that creates some regulatory uncertainty, but it's a responsible way of addressing market dynamics in pursuit of an objective. That being said, CARB is going to have to write the regs to implement this ICE ban in California. My hope is that they create a program that has flexibility, that has off-ramps, release valves that are triggered by potentially unintended implications of the program in the market rollout. I think also they need to take a really hard look at their energy infrastructure. California has not been the poster child in the last couple of years for a reliable electricity distribution system. The rolling blackouts, the fires, the constant challenges. My family is still in California, and they talk about how they haven't had power in a couple of days because of this, that, or the other. The reliance on imported electricity from other states. I talked to a reporter from I think Dow Jones when this came out. He said, you know, I've been covering the California electricity market the last 2 years. It's an antiquated system that is in so much dire need of upgrades and investment that I don't know how it's going to be able to support this. That these are real challenges. You can say we want to reduce our emissions and go to a zero emission vehicle population. That is a great objective. But the ramifications of it and the things that need to be put in place in order for that to be successful cannot be underappreciated, and they better not be unexpected. They really need to spend time anticipating what are the potential challenges that this program can introduce to the market that we aren't thinking about, and how do we create a program that can respond effectively on behalf of the constituents to make sure that this program does not impose unnecessary burden on consumers. And that is a huge undertaking.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of complexity. I'm, you know, just curious if this, you know, just curious out loud, is this, you know, to your point of an antiquated system, is this a catalyst, one of perhaps many that serves as a catalyst for those improvements to California's infrastructure to actually happen? Let's close.
It could be. And, you take a look at the Apollo program and all the beneficial technology that came out of that program. Sure, we landed a man on the moon, but what else came from it? Tons of stuff that we use every day was a derivative of that program. You know, an objective like this can deliver positive derivatives to other sectors of the economy that are ancillary to the objective, and that would be a positive thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let's close with what I think is an interesting topic given the cycle. And this is, you know, the ongoing debate, transition, discussion around a move to clean energy, right? You look around the world, certain countries have certain competitive advantages. Some are low cost, some are manufacturers, some are access to, you know, good infrastructure, good healthcare, good legal systems, et cetera, solid supply chains. When you think of the United States and you think about the electrification of transportation and the debate around clean energy, and the conversation, I think, is probably a better word about transitioning to clean energy. What's America's competitive advantage? Is it R&D? Is it you know, access to jobs? And in your view, what might that mean for jobs in the future?
Wow, that's a big question. And let me, I'm gonna take it a slightly different direction and try to get back to this specific question. Clean energy, clean transportation. Right now, a lot of people are saying it has to be electric. I disagree. I think electric vehicles are a component. They're part of the future system. They are clearly a positive contributor to tailpipe emissions reductions. But there are other technologies, other opportunities, other research being done on different energy profiles for the transportation sector that we cannot overlook. And we need to make sure they have a place to grow and develop within the market and demonstrate what they can do, because they might provide a lower cost alternative to achieving the same objectives compared to electrification. But that's, you know, in today's world, it's either black or white, red or blue. You don't necessarily, not a lot of people are open to discussions that challenge the assumed path forward. So that's one area. I hope that the advantage the United States has relative to other markets, it is not in the production of batteries. It is not necessarily in the production on a cost basis of vehicles. I'm hoping it is in our ingenuity. It is in our ability to tackle the challenge, which is how do we reduce emissions? And that's what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to electrify the system. We're trying to reduce emissions to create an environmentally neutral transportation sector. If we allow the intelligence of the United States, the capabilities of our research and development, of our scientists, of our engineers, to explore the opportunities to achieve that objective, which is reduce emissions, and at the same time, we need to make sure we don't bankrupt American families, that could be our greatest strength, because I believe in the capabilities of our nation's scientists and engineers to develop some incredible products and processes and systems. We've seen it for decades to come. And every time a new challenge is put forth, you know, these industries have stepped up, we got the solution here. It may not be what you envision, but we got one. And let's see if it works. So I'm really hoping that mindset, that capability is given an opportunity to demonstrate what it can do. And that is going to be incumbent upon the leadership of this country to set targets, objectives, identify our path forward, where we want to go. We want to take that hill, but let the market figure out the best way to take the hill that is not only environmentally sustainable, but the term sustainability is all about endurance. It's not about environment. So when I talk sustainability, environmentally sustainable, economically sustainable, because any program that is not economically sustainable will likely fail in the absence of a government support program. But even those are temporary in nature. So we really need to find out what is that strategy. And I think we can do it if we unshackle our scientists and engineers to really push the envelope on various technological solutions. I think we're going to come up with something that's absolutely fantastic. And it's going to be exciting. I just hope that the policies allow that to happen.
John, thank you for spending a few minutes with me today. Fascinating discussion, terrific insights. Appreciate you spending time with us today.
Hey, anytime. I love talking about this stuff. It's the highlight of my life.
Take care. We'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, Steve.
That's Daily Drive for Friday, October 30th. For breaking news, go to autonews.com. And to catch up on more than 150 episodes of Daily Drive, go to autonews.com/Daily Drive. As always, thanks for listening. Have an amazing weekend.